Welcome to the MacArthur Memorial Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Williams. Join me as we explore the life and legacy of General of the Army Douglas MacArthur and discuss a wide range of military history topics from the American Civil War to the Korean War. In February 2024, the MacArthur Memorial hosted an event to mark the 125th anniversary of the Philippine-American War. This event was in partnership with the Hampton Roads chapter of the Filipino-American National Historical Society and the Council of United Filipino Organizations of Tidewater. The event featured presentations by several scholars on different aspects of the war. This episode features a lecture by Dwight Sullivan on the capture of Emilio Aguinaldo. Our final speaker today is Dwight Sullivan, a lawyer and an adjunct faculty member at George Washington University Law School. He is also the author of Capturing Aguinaldo, The Daring Raid to Seize the Philippine President at the Dawn of the American Century.
So let's go back 123 years to February 3rd, 1901. So it's the second anniversary of the beginning of the Philippine-American War. As you see from the front page of the Virginian Pilot, the news of the day was dominated by the recent death of Queen Victoria after more than six decades on the British throne. In the United States, the president was William McKinley. The vice president-elect was Theodore Roosevelt. Remember that until 1937, the inauguration didn't happen until March. The American flag had 45 stars. The 45th star was added 5 years before when Utah was admitted to the Union. And Cadet Douglas MacArthur was a yearling at West Point. Now, let's go back to that front page of the Virginian Pilot. And there, next to an illustration of Queen Victoria's mausoleum, and right below an article about the Boer War in South Africa, is a dispatch about the Philippine-American War, reporting on a skirmish in which five American soldiers were killed, four wounded, and two missing in action. Now remember that in November of 1899, the conventional aspect of the war, the Philippine-American War, had ended. And on that day, Arthur MacArthur, in the field commanding the 2nd Division, sent a message back to headquarters. So this is November 23rd, 1899. And he said, "The so-called Filipino Republic is destroyed. The Congress is dissolved. The president of the so-called republic is a fugitive. The generals are separated without any means of conference or concerted action. The authority under which an army was kept in the field no longer exists. The army itself as an organization has disappeared." But as we saw from that article on the front page of the Virginian Pilot, this assessment of Aguinaldo and the Philippine fight for independence, those proved more resilient than was anticipated at the time. And from November of 1899, recall that at that point, Aguinaldo slipped through a cordon. There was an American pincer movement that was closing it. It didn't close on time. And Aguinaldo slipped through. And since then, since November of 1899, no American knew where he was. But that changed on February 9th of 1901. There was a 24th Infantry Detachment at a remote outpost, and there were seven insurrectos that surrendered to them, along with some correspondents. And that led that outpost to send a dispatch to headquarters of the 4th District that said that surrendered insurgents and correspondents they carried reliably indicated that Aguinaldo was in Palanan with 100 armed men. And the commanding general of the 4th District who received that report was Frederick Funston. Now, Frederick Funston was 5'4" tall. He was a diminutive dynamo. He was the son of a congressman. He was a University of Kansas dropout, and he was an inveterate adventurer. He'd participated in botanical expeditions to climatic extremes, both in Death Valley and in the Yukon. For 17 months, he was an artillery officer with the Cuban revolutionaries fighting against Spain for independence. When the military buildup for the Spanish-American War began, he was appointed as the regimental commander of the 20th Kansas. And the 20th Kansas went to the Philippines, but it arrived too late for the war with Spain. but soon found itself fighting against the Americans' former allies, the Philippine Independence Forces under Emilio Aguinaldo. Both Funston and the 20th Kansas proved particularly adept at combat. In fact, Funston was awarded a Medal of Honor for a bold cross-river attack that turned the enemy flank during a particular significant campaign. So Funston says, hey, send the courier that was carrying this correspondence along with that correspondence to my headquarters in San Ysidro. And so here's one of the letters that that courier was carrying. And as you can see, it's a combination of Spanish and a cipher that combined numbers and mathematical symbols. And Funston assigned the task of deciphering that correspondence to Lazaro Segovia. Segovia was a native of Spain. He'd gone to the Philippines to fight with Spain against the Philippine Revolution. After that war ended, he joined the Philippine revolutionaries in their fight against the United States. But 15 months in, he switched sides and he joined the United States. He worked for Funston as both a scout and an intelligence asset. And for 3 hours, he labored over that ciphered correspondence. And then he shouted, "Ya la tengo." He'd broken the code. And they were able to quickly decipher the correspondence. And the correspondence did indicate that Aguinaldo was in Palanan up there in Isabela province. And in one of these letters, this was particularly important, he asked his cousin, General Valderramo Aguinaldo, to send him 400 reinforcements. And the letter said that Cecilio Segismundo, who was his courier, would lead those reinforcements back to his headquarters in Palanan. So Funston pondered what he'd learned there. And the next day he met with Segismundo and he ran by various strategies to try to capture Aguinaldo. First, he said, well, you know, the U.S. Navy could go up the coast and then there could be a lightning raid and they could seize him. And Segismundo said it'll never work. There are native tribesmen that live along the coast. They would alert Aguinaldo and Palanan before any U.S. soldiers were able to get there. And then Funston said, well, what about a march up through the center of Luzon and go to Palanan that way? And he was told that wouldn't work. There was only one mountain pass. And it was very closely guarded. And then Funston came up with a very elaborate Trojan horse campaign. He said, okay, Aguinaldo's expecting reinforcements. What if we provide those reinforcements with Philippine soldiers that are loyal to the United States? We can have some U.S. Army officers, of course, including Funston himself, accompanying them, pretending to be Army privates who had been captured in a battle. And then they would be welcomed into the enemy headquarters. And Segismundo heard that idea and he said, you know, I think that might work. Now, Emilio Aguinaldo would later claim that Segismundo had been subjected to two administrations of the water cure in order to win his cooperation. Now, the water cure, it was used quite often by U.S. soldiers as a means of extracting intelligence and information in the Philippines. One American soldier wrote this description in a letter home. Now, this is the way we give them the water cure. Lay them on their backs, a man standing on each hand and each foot, then put a round stick in the mouth and pour a pail of water in the mouth and nose. And if they don't give up, pour in another pail. They swell up like toads. I'll tell you, it's a terrible torture. And sometimes that was augmented by kneeling or putting a rifle butt into the individual's stomach. So they would spit out the water and administer another dose. Sometimes it was made even more excruciating by using salt water. But this is all, it was almost certainly not true that Segismundo had been subjected to the water cure. Both a private diary entry by an American author, American officer who was there, and personal correspondence written with no apparent motive to fabricate indicates that Segismundo voluntarily cooperated with the Americans in this unit. So Funston then went to Manila and he briefed the commanding general of the Department of Northern Luzon, Lloyd Wheaton, and the military governor of the Philippines, Arthur MacArthur. He briefed them on their plan. MacArthur enthusiastically agreed to it. He left the details to his subordinates, but he insisted on one operational detail. Aguinaldo must be captured alive. And so then recall that this depended upon having some Philippine soldiers that were loyal to the United States participate in the operation. Well, a company of Maccabees were chosen to play that role. The Maccabees had aligned themselves with Spain during the initial Philippine Revolution. And when the war of the United States against the Philippine nationalists commenced, the Maccabees switched their alliance to the United States. Company D, these men are from Company D, 1st Battalion Maccabee Scouts. They were designated as the unit that would participate in this, but they weren't told what their mission was. The unit was commanded by two American officers. This is Lieutenant Oliver Perry Morton Hazard, better known as Happy Hazard. He and his older brother, Russell, were the American commanding officers of this unit. So they were detailed to participate in the unit as well. Funston also chose his cousin, Lieutenant Burke Mitchell, to be part of the campaign. And the final American officer would be Harry Newton, who had earlier led an amphibious raid in Casiguran, a town that would be important to their mission. Funston also chose to take along several Filipinos to play the roles of the officers of that reinforcement unit. That's actually Segovia on the far side of the picture. Second from your left is Segismundo. In the middle is Hilario Talplacido, who played the role of the commanding officer. He would be particularly significant in the campaign. Now, as you see from this topographical map, the northeast coast of the Philippines is particularly rugged territory and is protected from most of the rest of Luzon by the Sierra Madres mountain range. So there couldn't be a march from San Ysidro to Palanan. So part of the mission was to have the U.S. Navy deliver the expeditionary force somewhere near Casiguran Bay, and then from there it would make the 60-mile march to Palanan. So Admiral George Remy was asked to detail a ship, and he provided USS Vicksburg, an Annapolis-class gunboat, to be the ship that would take this expeditionary force close enough to conduct its mission. These are the officers of Vicksburg. Seated in the middle is Commander Edward Barry, who was the captain of the ship. Not pictured is the first sergeant of the Marine Detachment, an Irish immigrant named Daniel Sullivan, who is my paternal grandfather. All right. So once the ship got underway, there was a mission brief. Most of the people that were on the ship had no idea what their mission was until they got underway. And then there was a mission group. And the Maccabees expressed extreme agitation after the mission brief. They did not think the plan was work. They were convinced that those officers, the former Philippine revolutionaries, would betray them, and they didn't want to go. But then their first sergeant, Pedro Bustos, who's there on the left of the photo, Funston called him a little shriveled old man, but with the heart of a lion. And he slapped his chest and said, "I can't speak for the others, my general, but as for me, I am a soldier of the United States." And then with that, the planning got underway. So one of the things that was required was to make the Maccabees look like insurrectos. And so they were issued clothing that had been seized from Filipino units. They were issued an assortment of Mausers and Remingtons. And then this is what they looked like after they'd been transformed aboard Vicksburg. But once the ship got underway, nothing went right. The weather was very rough. The seas were rough. There was an epidemic of seasickness. Vicksburg ran aground at one point on the eastern shore, along the eastern coast, which delayed the mission. There was a plan that they would get native boats, they would get bancas that the expeditionary force would transfer to at sea and then take those bancas to Casiguran. They were able to buy three bancas in Polillo Island, along with a supply of rice that they would use as their food on the expedition. Those are the three bancas that they purchased. All three of them sank in rough seas. So nothing was going right. Finally, USS Vicksburg goes into Casiguran Bay, and it drops off the expeditionary force 10 miles inside the bay. And from this point until the end of the operation, they were on their own. Funston and his expeditionary force were on their own. They had no way of communicating with the Americans. And they knew, remember, they were behind enemy lines wearing false uniforms. They knew that if they were captured, in all likelihood, they would be shot as spies. So the plan had to be changed because they didn't have the banca. So first they had a 20-mile march to get to Casa Goren. When they got to the town, three important things happened. First, the ruse worked. They were accepted as a native, as a Philippine army unit with these five Americans as POWs. The facade worked. Secondly, they had dispatches, correspondence to Aguinaldo. About 4 months before this, just in a routine patrol, Funston, even though he was a brigadier general, he liked to go out on patrols, and he was a field general. In a routine patrol, they'd stumbled across General Urbano Lacano's headquarters. And Lacano was able to get away, but they seized some letterhead, some of his Brigada Lacano letterhead. And one of the people in Funston's headquarters forged the general's signature on this stationery. And then they wrote up a letter to Aguinaldo telling him that he had dispatched this company of reinforcements, to Palanan. Also, Tal Placido signed a letter that described this fictitious firefight in which the unit had captured five Americans. And they got a runner to take these up to Palanan ahead of them so that there wouldn't be alarm when this unit started approaching them with these five Americans included within it. So that was the second significant thing that happened. The third significant thing is they needed to replace their food supply. Remember, their food supply sank with the bancas. And so they tried to gather up food, but there wasn't much rice in the area. Most people in that area subsisted on fish and sweet potatoes. They had a hard time gathering food. And when they finally set out on their mission, there was a pre-planned rendezvous time with Vicksburg. Because remember, they were out of communication. So they had a timetable. They had to be done by March 25th, because that's when Vicksburg was going to pull in a Palanan Bay. When they set out, they had insufficient food. And then the first night, a lot of the food that they brought was pilfered, including a number of the chickens that they had brought along with them. And so Segovia had to essentially lead the unit, because Funston couldn't do it because he was supposed to be a POW. And they had 12 pack bearers from Casa Goren with them. So they needed to maintain the charade as they marched that 60-mile march up the coast. And so the first night, a lot of the food was pilfered. And so Segovia looked at the food and he said, you know, we only have enough for quarter rations for this 6-day march. So the men were reduced to eating one quarter of what they would normally eat while they were undergoing extreme physical exertion. The east coast of Luzon is very mountainous. They had to go up mountain slopes, down mountain slopes. They had to repeatedly cross streams that were swollen because it was raining the entire time they were there. Funston said that the rain turned what was left of their food into a fermented, soggy mass. And so this is what they faced as they were executing this mission, making this arduous trip. It's only 60 miles as the Philippine Eagle flies between Casa Goren and Palanan, but because of the rough terrain, it was a 90 mile hike. So finally on the sixth day, the men are down to their final morsels of food. They're exhausted. And finally they come to a Philippine army outpost that's only 8 miles from Palanan. And they get in there, And the ruse had worked. Remember, the correspondence had gone up that had earlier explained what was happening. And so instructions had been left at that outpost to separate the American POWs from the Philippine soldiers and to send the Philippine reinforcements to Palanan. So this resulted in the Americans being separated from the rest of the expeditionary force during the final battle that would occur. So the next morning after some food had been sent down from Palanan, the expedition began that final 8-mile march. And let me mention the previous day, the day they got to the outpost, it was Emilio Aguinaldo's 32nd birthday, and there was enormous feast and celebration in Palanan. So the next day, the expeditionary force, the Macabebes under the leadership of Segovia, marches the final 8 miles. They get to a river, they cross the river, and the plan worked. They were welcomed as brothers in arms. The Macabebe scouts were put at the position of attention. And then at the crucial moment, an order was given to fire an oblique volley into the presidential guard. Now, remarkably, only two presidential guardsmen were killed, but the rest fled, most of them dropping their weapons. There was a short gunfight in Aguinaldo's headquarters. There's Aguinaldo's headquarters building. There was a short gunfight there, and Segovia twice shot Colonel Villa, who was the chief of staff of Aguinaldo. And then Hilario Tal Placido, who until then had he wasn't a great marcher. Macabebes actually had to carry him on that march up the coast. But at the crucial moment, he's the person that physically restrained Aguinaldo and said, "You are a prisoner of the Americans." Now, the Americans had missed the battle. By the time they arrived, the battle was over. But they still had to wait 2 days until their planned rendezvous with USS Vicksburg. And they spent most of the time taking celebratory photos in Palawan with a Kodak camera that Bert Mitchell had brought along with him. And then finally, when USS Vicksburg arrived, when General Aguinaldo boarded the ship, he did so no longer as the president of the Philippine Republic, but as a prisoner of war. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you have questions, suggestions, or comments, we want to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at MacArthur1880, on Facebook as the General Douglas MacArthur Memorial, or you can email MacArthurMemorial@norfolk.gov.